BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Five Lives Rugby Union Daily with Chris Jones.
Rugby Union Daily, Monday morning, we're up and running with the Daily. And over the next 5 days, you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the sport as we build up to one of the biggest and best competitions in rugby union. The Six Nations just days away, Friday night, France against Ireland and Marseille. Saturday, England are over in Rome to play Italy, and Scotland travel to Cardiff, where they've not won in 20 plus years. Wales against Scotland on Saturday afternoon. Loads to come this week. And today on this bumper episode of The Daily, you're going to hear from a new head coach, Gonzalo Casada from Italy. You're going to hear from Scotland's new co-captain, Rory Darge. Peter Romani, the new Ireland captain, is also on the pod, as is Gareth Rees-Owen of Nations Pod fame. But first, welcome back to the Rugby Union Daily, Warren Gatland. Good to see you. Warren, what number Six Nations would this be for you?
I didn't know until the other day, and someone said to me it's number 17 or something.
17?
Yeah.
What, for you, three, four Ireland?
Yeah, I think one was the Five Nations. And,
right.
And two Five Nations or something, I can't remember. And then Six Nations, yeah.
17?
Yeah.
And does it change?
I don't think so, no. It just gets, for me, it gets more and more exciting, I think. It's an unbelievable tournament. I just think the history of this tournament, the fans, it's not a game of rugby. It's more of an event, you know, in terms of the build-up, the day, sometimes the weekend for people sort of travelling, the away fans, the atmosphere in the games. It's very, very special, and so it's something to really look forward to and be excited about.
And have you found over those 17 Six Nations that it brings the best out of you and your players?
I think so. It's a challenge. It's always a challenge because you've got limited preparation time. You're not together that long as a team, so you've got to kind of prioritise in terms of the way that you want to play and stuff. It's a tournament about momentum. It's kind of, if you can win that first game, first couple of games, and build on that, build confidence, then you've got a chance of winning. And that's kind of what I've found in the past. It's kind of doing that. It's you know, trying to get off to a good start. And for us, for this tournament coming up, it's having Scotland home in the first game, in front of a full house, is a great game to get first up. We've got England away at Twickenham second, which you've got to be excited about. So yeah, happy with the draw, and but it's a challenge for us. We've got a young squad, some real youngsters coming in, kind of starting the next cycle, building to the next World Cup, but the Six Nations is still really, really important for us.
You mentioned momentum. It feels as if, you know, going to Twickenham, you could be in two very different places. You know, you beat Scotland, confidence, country gets behind you, all the stuff you've had in the build-up, you know, things keep getting thrown your way, your squad's had some big players missing, all that could be forgotten. You lose, and then suddenly you go to Twickenham, which is a traditionally really hard place to go. So I know it's always the same, but the focus on that first game must be absolutely enormous.
It is, and that's the crowd are going to make play a huge part in terms of that. There's nothing better than the Principality Stadium when it's full and the crowd get behind you. But yeah, you're 100% right. It's kind of like there's probably no in between. It's kind of like you go one way in the Six Nations and everyone sort of gets behind, or if you lose a couple of games, then it's doom and gloom, and you're trying to scramble a bit and get out of it, which was a little bit like we were last year in terms of the Six Nations. Obviously, it wasn't just the rugby. There were a lot of other things going on that were really challenging. But
have things settled down on that front?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think kind of when I look back on the Six Nations and I think as coaches we had to let things unfold and sort of play out and then focus on our preparation and build up to the World Cup, and I thought we did that well, and we said, you know, beforehand that we think we can surprise a number of people. I thought we did that. Really happy with the way that we sort of won our pool, and but probably should have won the quarterfinal as well. We had an opportunity to do that, and taking nothing away from Argentina, but I'm really excited about where Welsh rugby is at the moment. So there's a lot of doom and gloom and negativity, and I think it's, we're going through a reset sort of financially in terms of restructuring and stuff. But what I'm seeing is that because of the financial restrictions on some of the regions, what's happening is that we've got some young players that have been exposed to regional rugby that potentially in the past they would have never have had that opportunity, and they've sort of burst onto the scene, and I'm excited about some of them. Yeah, are they ready yet? Probably not quite, but coming into camp with us, we'll try and see if we can sort of fast track them a little bit. It's about building over the next few years. So we've got 5 new caps and 8 players that have never played in the Six Nations before. So for me, I see it as a real positive. Other people would report on that differently, and depends on what sort of stance you want to take. But I've always been the eternal optimist and always believe. And so it's about us building and preparing well for that first game. And if we win that, you never know what can happen.
Do you think you can surprise people this Six Nations?
Well, I think we surprised people during the World Cup. You know, there were lots of speculation beforehand that we weren't even going to get out of our pool. So to win the group, I thought was a great achievement. So, look, the great thing about us is that there isn't any expectation, and we'll go in there probably as underdogs. Given you look at the age profile of the team, it's a very young side, a lot of inexperience within the squad. Probably the region's not doing brilliantly well at the moment. But one of the things that I've found in the past and with Wales is that those players, when they come into you and they put that red jersey on and they understand the history behind it, the expectation of wearing that and what it means, they seem to grow another arm and a leg. And sometimes I've had conversations with players and who've come from teams that haven't been performing well. And, you know, one of the things that I've asked and have said, you know, what's the difference when you come into the Welsh camp? And they kind of, simple as we come in here, we believe we can win. And, you know, there's no special formula in that. It's about the mind and confidence and self-belief and the psychological implications, that they're massive in high level sport, and how do you build that confidence within a group to go out there and perform?
And you've done it before with a young group. You know, looking back to 2010-11 kind of time into that World Cup, the Slam in 12. Do you have the personnel to do that this time with Alan Wynne-Jones and Ken Owen and Dan Bigger and Felipe Faletau and Dan Lydia and those kind of guys not being around, Lee Halfpenny, the list could go on?
Yeah, there's and we've got injuries as well, with Jack Morgan being out and Dowie Lake being injured as well, and maybe a couple of others. So it's going to be a challenge, but I think that's what excites me as a coach, is that, like I said, there's no expectation, but it's how hard you work, it's the preparation that you put in to make sure that the players are completely clear on what the expectations are, how we're going to play, just wearing that jersey with pride and giving 100%. And if you do that, like I said, you know, anything can happen, and I'm sure those players will do that, even though they are pretty young, there's a lot of inexperience. But we've got that mixed in with, you know, some experience in certain positions, and I think that's a nice balance to have for us going forward. There's some youngsters that we're looking to develop over the next few years that sort of aren't regular starters for their club or regional teams, but people that I've spoken to speak really highly of them, even though they're young. So I think for us, given that, you know, we're the smallest tier one nation in world rugby, we've often punched massively above our weight, and that sort of means that sometimes you have to take a slightly different road. You've got to give youngsters opportunities a little bit earlier than they might expect, or probably earlier than other nations would give those younger players the chance. But it's about fast-tracking them and trying to give them that development so that they get ready for international rugby as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I suppose that's relevant to your choice of captain, isn't it? As a 21-year-old, I mean, you did it with Sam Warburton back in, you know, 2010-11, as a 22-year-old, and he was still captaining 6-7 years on. Do you hope for the same from Daff Jenkins?
Yeah, I think looking at Dav and I'm looking at a group of players, a core group of players going forward, and I see Jack Morgan, Dowie Lake, Tommy Raphael, Dav Jenkins, Sam Costello, a couple of others. There's a chance for them, sort of, for me to develop them in a leadership group or a leadership roles, and have them as a core of the team going forward. That for them, I've spoken to a couple of them, there's a chance for you to sort of take this team by the scruff of the neck, to drive the things and mould the team around the direction that you want to take it in, with, you know, working with myself and with the coaches. And it's a great chance for those players to really take the team by the scruff of the neck, really, and take that on board. And given the quality of men as individuals, as people, as professionals, as rugby players, I think they can really develop and work hard and take this team forward, not just from a coaching aspect, but different from a player's perspective.
And just finally, Warren, you know, you're known for often pitching things psychologically well. Over the next few days, you'll be reminding your players about Scotland's record in Cardiff, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think it's not the greatest record in the world. But you know, when we went up to Murrayfield last year, I hadn't lost to Scotland up there, and with a Welsh team, and you know, we were beaten. So that's the thing about records, are there to be broken. And you know, I think for us, it's focusing on the impact that the crowd are going to have, making sure that we prepare well. I think we'll go in there as being underdogs and stuff, and given that, you know, Edinburgh and Glasgow are going pretty well as club sides, and probably our regions haven't been going as well as they or we would have liked. But it's just about us working hard as a group and going out. I mean, the crowd are going to play a massive role in terms of getting those players up, particularly some of those younger players who wouldn't have experienced playing in a Six Nations in front of a full house. So, yeah, I think there's a big role psychologically in building confidence, really. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes that's about simple messaging that I might give, and I've done that in the past where I've come out and said, you know, I think we're capable of winning Six Nations or doing really well. And if the players see that, and they see that the coach believes in them and that they're capable of doing it, and if it just has 1% or 2% mm-hmm. impact, then it's done its job. And like I said, we've got a real group of quality young men at the moment that I want to see put that jersey on, wear it with pride, and go out there and make the fans happy.
Awesome. Wish you well. Thanks for joining us. Cheers.
Thanks, Chris. Cheers.
Right, Warren Gatland back on the Rugby Union Daily, this first Rugby Union Daily of many over the course of the upcoming 2024 Six Nations Championship. Gareth Rees-Owen has joined us of Scrum 5 and Nations Pod fame. Looking forward to getting together with Tom English to break some bread over the coming weeks, Gro?
Absolutely, my friend. It's nice to be together in person, though, as well, isn't it?
Yes, we never get the three of us together, though.
Never.
Always never, look at Scotland-Wales games, Wales-Scotland games. No. Never quite happens. No. That is something...
One day it will happen.
For 2024.
It will be electric.
Thing. Yeah, and when it happens, the listening figures will go
through the roof.
Yeah. Right, Gro, loads to talk about. From Warren Gatland, we're going to hear from Rory Darge, one of the Scotland co-captains shortly, and Gonzalo Quesada, as well as Peter Omani. The guests just keep coming. But it feels like a theme of change, doesn't it? It's a post-World Cup, it often happens, but with the number of new captains, especially, very much every country has a new look, because even if Italy have got the same captain, they've got a new coach who we're going to speak to.
Yes, and new skippers, new beginnings, and also a loss of talismanic figure with each specific nation. When you look at Farrell with England, Sexton...
Courtney Laws with England.
Courtney Laws. Wales is bigger of that level. Well, you can take a whole host of players who are now missing compared to at least 18 months ago, when you had Alan Wynne-Jones, Ken Owens, Justin Tipperick. All those would have been expected to have made the cycle.
Yeah. Jacking Halfpenny bigger.
You know, there's a group of them who are not there anymore. And, it's not quite a new beginning, but I'm intrigued to see, and I've spoken to a few players and coaches about this, what happens to that farewell day on the morning after all those sides were knocked out of the World Cup? When they meet again, do they go, remember that move we did in training, and remember that vibe we had then? Or do we go, right, no, this is day one of a 4-year cycle, everything starts again, reset button has been pressed?
Yeah, and that's something we're going to talk to Gonzalo Quesada about, trying to build a new Italy, but also the teams that went to the World Cup didn't perform particularly well, like Italy, but like Scotland, Rory Darge coming up shortly. But Gatland's an ever-present when it comes to Six Nations. He said it's number 17 as a coach, mainly with Wales over two stints, but also with Ireland. Again, he's talking, Grow, about surprising people, about getting them into camp, about parking regional form, all the staples of both iterations of Warren Gatland. But do you have a bit more pessimism than in other years? Because looking at that squad, it doesn't fill you with the confidence on paper that Welsh squads in the past may have done.
It's not the strongest of squads. In fact, many friends of mine, many international players, many experts have sent me private messages saying this is the weakest Wales squad in recent memory, certainly since the 90s. And when you think about, potentially, let me name this Wales team, and I'm playing a little bit here because this will not be the Wales team that starts, but some of your listeners now will not be that used to Welsh rugby. This is a team that could start for Wales in the Six Nations, okay? Kemsey Mathias, Evan Lloyd, Archie Griffin, Teddy Williams, David Jenkins, Alex Mann, Mackenzie Martin, James Botham, Kieran Hardy, Kai Evans, Johan Lloyd, Joe Roberts, Tom Rogers, Cameron Winnett, and another. So we'll just chuck in Rio Dyer. They are not names that are rolling off the tongue.
But that's not going to be the team, is it?
It's not going to be the team.
That could easily be the number. I mean, how many win the squad?
But then at the same time, you go, well, that's not going to be the tight end. Okay, who's your tight end then? Kieran Azrati, Leon Brown, or Archie Griffin? Where's the experience there?
Yeah, no Tom Francis, okay.
Where is the experience there? There's no Henry Thomas, no Tom Francis, no Samson Lee. We can go back and switch up. Something strange has happened in Welsh rugby. A lot of fingers were pointed towards Wayne Pivac, and people said that he overdeveloped players, played too many players. But Wales won the under-20s Grand Slam in 2016. There's just this huge...
Something's happened.
There's a huge gap of players who are in their late 20s that simply haven't kicked on and become established internationals. So all of a sudden, you have a lopsided squad that was... And one guy was complaining about this 18 months ago, that was full of 34, 35-year-olds, that so-called golden generation. Now you're back to an average age of 25. And we are picking some internationals, some players, some of these names, Domachowski, Kieran Azarati. They're not kids. You know, they've been around for a decade of Welsh rugby. So it's really interesting how these players fare in this competition. I'm worried primarily about the front five.
Yeah, that's a test for Dafydd Jenkins, Adam Beard, Will Rowlands. I think the second row, there's enough. I think the front row is an issue. And then when you take out a Jack Morgan and Justin Tibbett from the back row, they are a bit light. So we'll see. Yeah, I think it's kind of winging a prayer time, but Gatland's hope is that as he spoke about with us there, that the crowd, the Welsh jersey, getting them in the veil, getting them all together, and by giving people exposure and experience, which other countries might not, he's able to develop them and give them sort of experience ahead of their years, and that's obviously what he's hoping for from his captain, Jenkins, as well.
Well, Mackenzie Martin is the prime example. He's played, what, 6 games of rugby? And he's now in the international squad. What he has is a high ceiling. He walks past you. He's got that Mason Grady effect. He walks past you. Oh, he's a big guy. Check a ball in his hands. Got good footwork. Strong. There we go. He's a ready-made number 8. So he by definition, would have been really interesting had Morgan Morris been fit, because he is the real contrast. He's the player who week in, week out, performs the Ospreys 8 out of 8, 3 seasons in a row. He's the player of the season. Hasn't had a look in international rugby. Some people say that's because his potential for growth is rather limited. Where Mackenzie Martin is one that they're thinking in 4 years' time, he may well be a world beater, and we don't know. But that is a really interesting one, isn't it?
It really is. Okay, so let's just stick on this Wales against Scotland game, because that is a massive one on Saturday. Loads more to come on France Ireland. What a bumper opener Friday night. Going to be in Marseille for that, for 5 Live. Can't wait for commentary Friday night. And Italy England, fascinating as well. But Rory Darge is one of the Scotland co-captains, along with Finn Russell. And here's Darge on the pod.
5 Live's Rugby Union Daily.
Rory, captain, co-captain of your country. How does that sound? And did it take you by surprise?
Yeah, obviously it's an honour, and it's some feeling. Even when he called me and he was saying, "Oh, to update you on the captaincy and stuff," I still was like, you know, yeah. And then he said that I was going to be co-captains with Finn, and I'm just delighted. Like, especially to do it with Finn. I think that's really good because it's, you know, we're quite different in style and the way we approach the game and stuff. So hopefully it'll be a good balance and we'll be able to have a good campaign.
Yeah, how does it work, co-captains, when there are two of you doing not just on the pitch stuff, but maybe just as importantly off the pitch stuff too?
I think it probably works the same as it's worked since I've been involved with the leadership group. It's been, you know, pretty much delegated across the leaders anyway. You know, it's not like the captain's only one that speaks and sort of has his messages to the squad. Everyone does, and it works well with me and Finn. Obviously he'll be sort of more focused on the attack side of the game, and I'll be more focused on the defence. But there's guys like Jamie, obviously, and Sione, Grant Gilchrist, Kyle Staines, our captain at Glasgow. There's lots, I'm not going to name them all, Ali Price. There's loads of leaders in the squad. That was my experience of it. The only other time that I've done it was against Italy, and I obviously had two vice-captains for that, and Chris Harris and Sam Skinner, who are awesome leaders as well. But the amount of support you get is awesome, and you know, I don't think it'll feel any different to how it felt, you know, when we had one captain.
Have you always been a captain?
Yeah, you know, I was a bit at school and growing up and stuff, under 20s and under 18s with Scotland. I've done it a couple of times with my semi-professional club in Southern Knights, not very often, but I've done it a couple of times, and then obviously got the opportunity this year to do it for Scotland. Still, you know, took a bit of time to get my head around it, especially that first time. I'm glad that Gregor gave me that experience last year now, because it's a lot easier to get your head around, and it's, you know, I'm more excited for the role now than I maybe was. I was delighted, obviously, but it was a lot to take on the Sunday, getting told, and it was like a lot of sort of, I wasn't sure what was expected on me, and then finding that out as I went. Yeah, I'm just really looking forward to it this time.
Does it come naturally to you, leading a side?
I'm not sure. I think you'd have to ask.
Yeah. People have played with you. Yeah.
I like to think that I just don't let it impact me too much. You know, I think the way to lead is obviously by playing well, so you have to focus on that, and it's obviously a tough competition. You know, and there's competition for places, and it's going to be a tough campaign. So, you know, I've got to focus on my performance and what I can contribute through that first and foremost, and I think that'll always be the case. The other stuff will hopefully come naturally off the back of that.
Yeah, I mean, you spoke there about the 20s. I think you played for them when you were 17. You've been sort of tipped for the top for a long time, but it's happened pretty quick, going from debut, 2022 in the Six Nations, to captain in 2024.
Absolutely.
Do you reflect on sort of the meteoric nature of the rise?
Yeah. Sometimes it feels like a lot of the time it's still kind of, you're so involved in it that you can't reflect. Like you say, even after 20s, so I played 20s at a young age, but then I went to Edinburgh and I had a long period of time as a sort of trainer, or, you know, I would never have played for Edinburgh, really. I played one game for maybe 15 minutes, and then, so I spent a good amount of time in that sort of period in that mindset, and then when I came to Glasgow, it just went like that, like you said, meteoric. It was just like, played one game off the bench, and then started.
And then you're away.
And then got my Scotland shot after that. And yeah, it's just happened so quickly. But yeah, it's been awesome.
A couple to finish. The World Cup didn't go how you Scotland players, fans would have wanted. You see the Six Nations as a fresh start, even though you've got so many players who were involved in France.
Yeah, and obviously it's a good thing about sport, isn't it? Is that you have victories and losses, but you always get to go again, and, you know, we want to put it right, and we learnt a lot of the World Cup, so yeah, we'll just look to start. We've also got Wales first up, and that's one that I don't know the stats, but we've not won down there in a long time.
2002.
Yeah. So, you know, how better? That's not much of a better way to sort of start the campaign than if we, you know, going down there and getting a result. So, you know, yeah, that's how we look at it. It's been a long time since the World Cup, but, you know, you still want to get back out there after, like you said, it was a disappointing end to it.
Great to have you on. Thanks so much, Rory.
Thank you very much. Nice to meet you.
Right, Gareth Rhys-Owen is still with us. Rory Darge, you would have seen him plenty in the URC grow. He's kind of felt to me like the coming man of Scottish rugby, but he's completely arrived now, not just as one of the first names on the team sheet, as evidently he is. but the fact that he's co-captain as well to boot.
Interesting call. I remember him starting out for Glasgow. I have some memories of watching him, and someone may be able to add some meat to this bone, watching him during COVID times in empty stadiums and him really standing out, primarily because you're not quite 100% sure how to pronounce his name. And then he just absolutely blasts the opposition. He's a hybrid-y kind of seven, so he's a mix there of Richie and then Hamish Watson.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Not quite the power and the raw ballast of Watson, but he offers a little bit more maybe than your traditional Scottish back rower that's all about grunts. He's got good footwork. He's a really good player, and I spent some time with him today, as did you, and he's a very impressive young man as well, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, and it's a fascinating call from Gregor Townsend. It's an admission, clearly, that he doesn't see Jamie Ritchie walking into his starting 15, and if Ritchie plays 6, then Watson 7, there's Luke Crosby, there's Andy Christie, there's competition, but Darge has edged ahead of Ritchie, and I know they could play 6 and 7, but Gregor Townsend, by making this call, I think is saying that Rory Darge is his number one back rower, which has been a really quick elevation. He only debuted in Cardiff 2 years ago. And talking of Cardiff, this is a sink or swim game for both Scotland and Wales, I really think. And Warren Gatland admitted as much earlier. Wales win, they go to Twickenham, not with nothing to lose, but with a bit of pressure off because they've beaten a good team like Scotland. Wales lose, then they go to Twickenham, and it's going to be a tough afternoon. And likewise, Scotland have to back up going to Cardiff when they play France, which is, you know, an extraordinarily tough start for them to get to Cardiff and France at home. Where do you think Scotland are? The World Cup was very disappointing. Do you see them as contenders, or again a team that we're looking for 3 wins out of 5-4 at best?
I think you make such a relevant point. It's all down to match day one. If Scotland are to win here, bear in mind, the last time Scotland won, Wales skipper Dav Jenkins wasn't born. So the last time Scotland...
I was going to say no, but it's not a debate. It's a fact, isn't it?
Yeah, so the last time Scotland won in Cardiff, Dav Jenkins did not exist. So
his whole lifetime... Yeah, that's something. That's a stat.
And they won in Llanelli once, and I was unfortunate enough to be at that game again during COVID.
Yes,
and I was
in the autumn. The round that was played late in 2020. Yeah,
yeah, during COVID, and that was awful. So you can just write that out of the history books. You have to ask, and I can hear Tom's voice today, and I won't do the impression. If Scotland do not win in Cardiff this time around, when will they ever do it?
But we have said that before. We have said that before, maybe 2 years ago, but certainly at times 2020, they did win in Wales. It feels like it's perhaps come. It's been coming, and Warren Gatland made the point about Murrayfield last year. Wales had a great record at Murrayfield. Gatland had never lost to Scotland at Murrayfield, but if you don't play well and you come up against a better team, which Scotland were/are, then you get done regardless of where it is. And so I know exactly what you mean. It feels like...
And it's that strange thing about
Scotland.
Sport.
It's time for them to win in Cardiff.
It's that strange thing about sport, isn't it? That hoodoo, that monkey that sits in your back, that those nations that, you know, Scotland cannot win in Twickenham for how long was it?
It was from 83 to 21.
Once that record is broken, heat is off. Wales couldn't win in Twickenham since Adrian Hadley did the business. He was wheeled out every year because he did it. And then once they did win, they won a few more times. So Scotland have to start as favourites, don't they? And I think the heat is on Scotland. But this is from my personal point of view. Yes, if Wales lose, they finish 5th in the Six Nations competition. But are Wales expected to do any better than that, really? Can Warren go?
I think if you're looking at, you know, bookies and metrics and rankings, then yeah, Wales would be expected to finish 5th. But they've got 3 home games, and big if. But if they could beat Scotland, I wouldn't make them favourites in any shape or form to beat France at home. But they would feel they can give that a proper go if they've got a couple of wins under their belt, or at least one win. So yeah, I think it's a huge game. I know France or Ireland is the game that could define the championship at such an early stage, but always this Wales-Scotland game. So many fascinating narratives, and just a game that really can define either team's championship.
How do you think? What are your thoughts on, forget Rory Darjeon, Finn Russell as a captain?
Well, I think the co-captain thing.
The co-captain. What do you think of the idea of your mercurial?
But he's not like he's the co-captain, isn't he?
Okay.
And so. This is the point. I would be very surprised, even if though there has been a trend for coaches to make fly halves the captain. We've seen it with Sexton, with Bigger, with Owen Farrell. I'd still be staggered if Finn was ever the standalone captain. I think this is I think maybe Townsend is thinking. I think he's thinking as much off the pitch here as on the pitch. He's thinking, right, Finn's a leader now. He's a great fly half. He's experienced. He's going to really set our attacking template. But also we see, you know, I was watching a Bath game the other day on TV, and at half time, the role Finn was taking with the backs and Lee Blacker, who's a brilliant backs coach, was just kind of letting him take the lead. So Finn is clearly so influential. I think when it comes to on the pitch, you can't have two co-captains in a referee's ear. I think if a ref, you've got to say, look, I'm going to take it from one of you, and that will probably be Darj because he's the back rower. He's in the midst of it all. So, yeah, I think it's canny. I suppose we're probably conditioned to think that all great teams need one dominant captain, but you keep hearing modern-day players and coaches talk about leadership groups and shared responsibility. So maybe that's a bit of an antiquated and dated view. But, yeah, look, I just think the co-captain angle, Finn Russell, all lends to a fascinating game between Wales and Scotland. We are going to talk a bit about Italy next on the pod. Gonzalo Casada, their new boss, is coming up, and that is right after this.
Pep Guardiola,
a perfectionist,
a tactical genius,
the best manager of his generation,
the best manager in history.
Reserve team coach Pep Guardiola, a popular former player at the Nou Camp, will take over from Rijkaard.
This is a podcast all about the man who has shaped the modern game.
It feels almost as if he's solved the riddle, if he's cracked the code for football.
From his history in La Masia to dominating football across Europe.
He's brought a brand of football to the Premier League that we've never seen before.
Everybody plays like Pep's teams now.
From football, he takes you to heaven.
From BBC Five Life.
Sporting giants, Pep Guardiola.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
Five Lives, Rugby Union Daily.
Well, our next guest on the Rugby Union Daily is a new coach, Gonzalo Casada, the new coach of Italy. Lots of new captains, but you're the only new coach, so a big moment for you.
Yeah, an amazing moment. Really excited. Now the head, not too emotional, more like thinking more rationally, because I'm really looking forward to have the team to start preparing all together for this couple of days coming for the first game against England. And on the non-rational part, a bit of emotion, of course. I've been in Six Nations already with France. I was assistant coach. But well, being at the head of Italy, it's a big emotion for me too, and a real honour.
Yeah, so you're speaking great English to us. Obviously, everyone knows you as a former Argentinian star, fly half, played in World Cup, so your Spanish is probably okay too.
Yeah.
And then you speak excellent French, no doubt, from how many years in France?
Yeah, 24 years.
24. And the Italian's good too?
And Italian, I took some lessons the last couple of months, and I installed myself. You know, my contract started the 1st of January, but I decided to fly and start working and living from 1st of November, just after the World Cup. And yes, now I did all my meetings with the staff or in Italy, I speak Italian. I think it has to improve, but I have already some good basics.
So it's just the four languages you speak?
Yeah. If when I'm going to speak fluent Italian, I can say four. Now it's getting there. I'm getting there with Italian.
And you mentioned your wife is Latvian as well?
Yeah.
So you speak good Latvian?
Yes. No. I when I was so confident with my languages, I said she speaks Russian too. So I said, I will learn Russian. And after 1 week, I said, "Okay, I won't learn Russian."
No, but it's amazing. We see so often with coaches and, you know, with various sports, how to communicate with the players. So imagine being able to speak great Italian is a key part of that. Yeah,
our job has that in common. You know, communication. You need to. It's all about communication. And me is not how much I know about coaching or how much I know about rugby. It's what I will be able to transfer, to communicate with the players. So if I have to say something and then someone has to translate it to make it arrive, maybe it's not exactly the same message, maybe it's not transferring the emotion I want to transfer. So today is not exactly the perfect Italian I would love to speak, but it's good enough, and it's whatever I think to say, I say, and it's communication is very important.
Now, as a coach, you have a wealth of experience in France. You mentioned your work with the national side, won a Grand Slam in 2010 as an assistant coach. You've coached plenty of places in France. Now a big international job. How ready do you feel for it?
I feel ready, and that was the moment for me. That's why when Italy, the president of Italy called me and offered me the opportunity, I hesitated a little bit because I had another opportunity in France, but I knew that it was the best option for me, and I was so proud of it. And as you said, yes, I've been head coaching professional teams, Super Rugby, Europe, assistant coach for Argentina, assistant coach with the French team. So maybe head coaching a national team was the moment now. And well, it's now. We don't have a lot of time, a lot of things I would love to prepare in a different way. But I feel I'm ready, and we have a good staff, a good bunch of players. And we're going to work a lot to make sure that we are competitive since it's the beginning of the cycle. But it's professional rugby. We have to be ready, and we have to be able to have a competitive team already for these first games.
You mentioned it was the best option for you, but a really difficult job as well. You're taking over a team that last won in 2022, as we know, but before that was 2015. The World Cup didn't go so well. So how big a job does this feel for you?
Yeah, no, honestly, all my life, it's always been a bit like that. I like this kind of challenges, and it's the ones that make you grow a lot too. Because, as you said, yeah, the World Cup finished with two really bad games and bad scores, that you can feel the team is still a bit marked about it. And
how do you change that?
I don't know. You have a clue? No. It's luckily the new message, a new beginning, and especially that they did some good things the last 2 years. The Italy improved.
Just to build on that, not just focus
exactly.
on the World Cup.
Yeah. What we're trying to say is that the staff before, they did really a good job. The team improved a lot, a young team. They brought in a lot of new staff. The players believe on that. So we are more trying to grow on the performances. As you said, the results, the wins in Italy in the last 20 years since they entered the Six Nations. I don't know how many, but you can count them. So you lose the count of the wins of Wales, Scotland, France, Ireland and England. But you can count the number of victories of Italy. So, of course, for us, it's more a challenge that, like every coach may be saying, you know, we never talk results, we talk about improving, but it's true. We have a young team, it's the youngest team, with most uncapped team, with the country with the less franchises, with the less professional players, blah, blah, blah. But the team showed that they can approach the level. So now we have to keep on improving and prepare ourselves to really compete. I don't want to be a nice-looking team that from time to time make some nice attacking moves, to really compete in this competition. And we have a spirit. They have this group of players, they have a heart, and they can play rugby. So we have to combine those and try to make the best out of it.
Because on the one hand, you need to try and give the players confidence, which is hard when you're losing matches. But also they might feel pressure, because the more Italy lose, the more people go, should Italy be in the competition? So you have all of this to deal with.
Yeah, that's why. And we don't want to be the team that there's no excitement about, because we will never get into the level of England, Ireland, or England, France, or England, Scotland. Well, all the big historical games will be always more important than the game against Italy. But it has to be a real challenge now. The team that plays Italy has to know that it's not a big chance of winning, but it's going to be a real fight there. So, and as you said, mentally, luckily, the two franchises are improving.
Benetton especially. Yeah.
It's true. What is that the double thing, no? Because they're improving a lot, but most of the key players are not Italian, or like the 9, 10, like Juren or Albornoz or Umaga, Rhino Smith, the Fekito, and Snyman, the captain, or the Gallo. They are not playing for Italy, but a lot of really good international Italian players are playing in this team and are improving and are winning. And win, you know, is something you have to learn about and you have to get used to. And it's not something that the Italian jersey is really used to. So I think we're preparing. We have a plan and a short time. And the biggest challenge, I've been saying that, is to, in such a short time, make sure that we have enough to compete against England and then little by little keep on bringing a progression of the things we want to do in the future.
Yeah, and just finally, what a start. England at home in Rome.
Yeah, England that finished third, that had a tough year, I think, last year, but did an amazing World Cup, and especially believing in what they've been working and their style and what they are strong at, and they built on that and arrived in the good place at the good moment and had an amazing World Cup. Now the challenge for us is knowing, with all these changes in the coaching, because you said, okay, it's true that I'm the only new head coach, but England changed the whole stuff. So will they defend the same? Certainly not. Will they attack the same? Will they use the same kind of kick and chase strategy that is one of their strengths? Of course, it won't change the whole thing, but definitely there's a lot of things that we are seeing when we analyze them that will change. So it's a kind of a chess game, and we're trying to do the same from our side, like change some stuff to have a bit of surprise, because until the third game, no one knows nothing about each other. And again, I think this tournament will be the tournament of innovation. I'm sure that all these guys around here, all the other coaches too, like, it was kind of boring, the World Cup in part of it, like, you know, all the winning teams were those who kicked most. So I think we will all try to look for some stuff.
Bit of a change of style, do you think?
Yeah, yeah. I think we're going to try to make, well, at least my head with what we can do, make the game keep on evolving and getting more attractive too. Winning is important, but I think our game has to keep being exciting so that you guys are more there and the guys that watch you can want to watch more. And I think I'm sure that all the coaches here are a bit on that, not just play to win, but play to attack, to improve. And I think the rules in World Rugby will follow that flow.
Brilliant. Well, thank you. Gracias. Merci. Grazie.
Grazie, grazie.
Thank you very much.
Merci beaucoup.
Okay, great to be joined by the experienced and multilingual Gonzalo Casado. Impressive bloke. French, Spanish, Italian, English speaker. Load of experience.
Yeah.
What he's done in the French national side, but the French club game. Says the time is right there to take on a job, but it's a big job. It's one of the biggest jobs.
It is a big job, but I've been lucky enough, through some circumstance more than anything, to have spent a lot of time over the past year in Italy, watching a lot of URC rugby, mostly in Parma, but also in Treviso. Something's happening quite exciting, I think, in Italian rugby right now. Yes, they were absolutely thumped in the World Cup, but the average age of that squad is so young. And a couple of the players of Parma were telling me, Zebra telling me about a month ago, saying, you wait in 3 years' time, 4 years' time, these players will be on 80, 90 caps. You will have a group of 14 to 15 internationals, all 28, all with 80, 90 caps. And there are players coming through that Italian under 20 system. It's a very stripped back system they have. It's almost a military academy system they run. They get a group of 50 players. They live with each other. They train with each other. And once you're picked in that group, you are coming through. So it's a very stripped, laid bare system. There are issues with Italian rugby right now, massive issues. But I think you could be quietly excited about this team. And maybe not this year, but in a few years' time, I think they may win two, if not three matches.
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
Yeah. But do you think it's a concern, as Casado raised, that the Benetton side, who are doing well,
are spending all the cash.
And they're propped up by a lot of non-Italian players, which is, I mean, like, 100%, that's a good thing. It's a good thing for young players to play alongside world-class players from outside the country.
Yeah.
And good leagues have a real cosmopolitan mix, I think, of nationalities. But if they've only got two domestic teams to choose from, and clearly they've got players playing all over the world, especially other parts of Europe. But I just, you know, Casada did raise a few names there of positions and players that might be blocking players coming through. But the other way of looking at it is, they're going to make these young players better by playing and training with them and playing in an environment that's doing pretty well at Benetton, or very well at Benetton.
Benetton have decided to go rogue. they're just going to try and win the URC, and the budget is massive. And that's really interesting, as you said, that players have been brought in at the expense. Zebrin now more or less works as the Italian academy. It's interesting, if you watch it under 20s level, most of the biggest, best talent are now being poached and going direct to France, especially some of the most exciting wingers. There's players coming through. That's the issue that Scotland and Italy will face, and potentially Wales may do. Everybody screams about cutting down from 4 to 3 to 2 regions, but is it better to have 4 unsuccessful regions who are giving game time to 200 players than 2 successful regions that are giving game time to 90 players?
Mm. One for another day, maybe.
Oh, yes.
One for another pod. Okay. Italy host England. Steve Borthwick's going to be on the pod tomorrow. Loads more to come on the daily today and tomorrow and throughout the week as we build up to a brilliant opening weekend of the Six Nations. But let's finish today's pod perhaps with the best game of the lot. France against Ireland. We know all about Ireland. World number one, Grand Slam champions, again falling at the quarterfinal hurdle. They're now Johnny Sextonless. They're now Keith Earlsless. And they've got a new skipper in Peter Omani. Here he is.
Five Lives Rugby Union Daily.
Peter, how cool does that sound? I know you've captained Ireland and you've captained Munster for so long, but to be named captain of the Six Nations must feel pretty special.
Yeah, it certainly is. Probably the biggest honour of my career. Probably certainly is, actually. Very special phone call to get. You know, and you look at the people who've done the job before, it kind of speaks for itself. The magnitude of the role, and you know what an incredible squad that's been picked. I'm very, very happy to be asked, to be honest with you.
Did you expect it?
I didn't, if I was going to be really honest. Andy gave me a call last week after the Toulon game, and kind of said, "Are you sure?" Like, but we had a good chat, and look, I've been involved with Ireland a long time now, and I've been involved in a lot of leadership groups, and I've had some work with some of the best players in the world and some of the best captains that, you know, have ever been, and hopefully I can use some of that experience to bring into this role.
How differently do you think you'll do it compared to Johnny?
Look, you've always got to be your own man. You know, he's certainly big boots to fill. You know, what a player and you know, what a person, what obviously a captain of the country, but you know, again, I've learned a huge amount from him, without a shadow of a doubt. I haven't played with him for so long, along with other guys as well. And I think we're always lucky with the leaders we have around us. You know, we've a very, very special leadership group who I'll be heavily dependent on as well. And I'll be far from on my tod in the role. I'll be looking to the boys and the squad to row in, you know.
You've had some real competition for places in that back row over the years with Ireland, you know, whether it's a Caelan Doris coming through or Dan Levy or any number of players that have announced themselves. But here you are at 34 as the captain, Pete, still playing some of the best rugby of your career, maybe even getting better and better and better. How proud does that make you that you've not sort of seen these guys come through and go, oh no, it's their turn now, but going, hold on, I've still got loads more to give and you're going to have to wrestle this shirt off me?
Yeah, well, look, that's the way I was kind of taught at the start was, you know, it's always the furthest thing from being your jersey, but it's down to what you do in it determines, you know, how long you'll be in the jersey. There's always going to come a point where you'll put it on the rack for the last time and, you know, you get an email to see you're involved in the Six Nations squad again as a special time and, you know, you want to do everything in your being to try and do your very, very best for the team. And you know, I've been lucky enough, you know, I've played, as you said, a lot of rugby, but I've been very well looked after at the same time mm-hmm. by the people around me. And, you know, they've given me the chance to stay in it for this period, you know.
Yeah, and when it comes to Ireland after the World Cup, you know, you're in such great form going in. You played some awesome rugby at the World Cup and then the quarterfinal happened. How do you sort of react to that and not try to undo all the great work you did in the few years building up and just try and put it down to an 80-minute, a bounce of ball, but still not trying to throw the baby out with the bathwater as we go into a new tournament?
No, certainly not. We certainly haven't become a poor team overnight, far from it. you know, I think we'll know that better than anyone. But at the same time, we certainly will look back and review it, and you know, rugby's always moving forward, and I think the best teams get ahead of it, and that's what we try to do, and that's what we'll be planning on doing over the next 2 weeks.
Does it feel a new era without Johnny Sexton, just because he's been around for so long and so pivotal to Irish rugby?
Yeah, of course, it's different. You know, guys like him and Keith, I don't think I've been in a squad that hasn't had at least one of them. You know, so it's certainly going to be different, but at the same time, you see the squad that's been named, and you know, the people who are in it, you know, obviously exciting, you know, the quality of rugby player, but you know, I think, you know, Andy's created an environment and a group of good people, which is the most important thing, and you know, it's incredibly exciting group to be getting back in with, and you know, really looking forward to meeting up today after this, and meeting back up again and stuck into the crack and getting stuck into some hard work.
And just to finish, you mentioned earlier, you know, you never know when it's going to be the last time you hang the shirt up or you put the shirt on. Does that motivate you? Does that fire you on going, look, you never know when it's going to end, I'm going to make sure that every time I pull this jumper on, it's as special as it can be?
Yeah, look, that has to be the way it is, you know what I mean? You don't know, you know, injuries, whatever way it is, you know, there's always that threat, but the most important thing is playing well for your country. When you're selected, you know, for me, you know, there is no bigger honour than in this game to be picked for your country, and it is a huge responsibility, and it's something I don't take lightly in the slightest, and you know, for me, performing is the most important thing.
Awesome. Great speech. Thanks so
much. Thank you very much.
Right, Peter Amani-Groh, ever intense, ever softly but steely spoken, the kind of guy who, oh, you can see why he leads.
Does he scare you?
There's an element of him that he feels like he's been 34 his whole career.
That's true.
Yeah, you know, he's 34 now and he's got the greys on the side like we all do. But, you know, he does have this intensity. He's Captain Munster, what, 10 years or so? Andy Farrell, we've got him on the pod tomorrow, so we'll ask him then about why Omani and why not a younger model. But yeah, it feels like it's his time and it's deserved. And the thing that we touched upon with him there, his obdurance and his reluctance, reluctance is not strong enough, his refusal to let the younger brigade come over and take his shirt, that has to be totally inspirational for everyone around him in that Irish setup.
Well, if you're going to pick him, why not pick him as skipper then? That's the obvious answer, isn't it?
Because there's nothing to suggest in the last 2 years that he's going anywhere performance-wise.
That's my point.
Yeah, exactly. All the Dorises and Jack Conans and all these hotshot players coming out of Leinster, the guy's still deserving of his place.
Yeah, and the argument to be made more often than not to bring a young skipper in is a fresh change, I said. But if he is driving standards already and he is not of that mindset that is quite sapping like some older players can be, and he's still there day after day after day, and it's the oldest cliche in sport, his performances, he does this talking on the pitch, yada 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 yada. I mean, as ref mics pick up, he literally does do his talking on the pitch. In the case of Peter Amani, I'm really interested about this game though. What do you think?
I expect France to win. I think that for some reason, I'm not sure why, and this doesn't make sense because I think Antoine Dupont's the best player in the world by a distance, but I think we know what we'll get from France without Dupont more than we knowing what we'll get from Ireland without Sexton. Because yeah. I think if you play, yeah, you know, Le Garec or you play Luku or anyone at nine for France, you still have around that player, Jalibert and Adonti, and the Ficou and an Aldry at eight. And of course, there's that experience. There's Henshaw and there's Ringrose and there's Gibson Park or Conor Murray and there's Caelan Doris. So it's almost tit for tat. But Sexton has been so influential at number 10, running the play, running the shape, running the patterns, that I don't quite know what you'll get from the other Irish 10, whoever it may be. But I think you do know more what you'll get from a Luku or a Le Garec or whatever. So I would expect France to win. I don't say that with huge amount of confidence. I think France will win the whole thing because they've got this nice start and end with Ireland and England at home. And it is an unbelievable way to start the tournament off. In fact, it's an unbelievable way, not just because it's the two best teams, the two Grand Slam winners the last 2 years, two smarting teams that feel they should have had two extra weekends in the sun at the World Cup. Both wait at the quarterfinal stage. They both have points to prove as setups and as coaches and as teams and as Leadership groups, so amazing fixture, but I think the French home advantage and the quality of that French team, I think will take them through. And I think we are in a bit of an unknown with Ireland, even though they'll have such a Leinster core, so many familiar faces. You just take Johnny Sexton out and they will look so different.
Yeah, yeah. Who starts? Crowley, we think, probably, isn't it?
Well, Crowley, I think Crowley is considered the man. You know, I think if it was this time last year, you'd have Ross Byrne to play similarly, to sort of sit right in, or to replace Sexton, almost more like for like, Leinster for Leinster, like that. So,
and
I'd say Crowley, but yeah, that's to be decided.
And going back to your, to Dupont point, you know, I've trademarked this phrase. You know, you're welcome to use it. Other people have, I've noticed.
But you're making it clear that it's yours.
It is, yeah. Mine. You know, I've been saying for a long time that Antoine Dupont is the best player in the world. Aaron Smith's the best scrum half in the world.
I like that, actually.
But yeah, by that, I mean that Dupont can do things that others can't.
He can play 10, 12.
He's you know, he's the centre forward that can slot back to play centre back for the last 10 minutes when you're leading. You know, he lives on another plane to everybody else. But if you want scrum half perfection, you pick Aaron Smith because he does everything with what he's been given.
What a scrum half should be doing.
With what he's been given.
Yeah, he doesn't run sort of backwards in a circle, look left, look right, and then
He can't do the impossible, which Dupont can do. And I always look at Luku and go, well, yeah, you're a pretty damn handy scrum half. Anyway, so exactly that point. And people say, oh, but they will miss Dupont and they miss Ntamack. Well, they've been living without Ntamack for a season now, so they'll be okay.
And Jalibert's flying for Bordeaux.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. So, you know, Luku and Jalibert, Luku would, I mean, would he get in instead of Gibson Park? Probably not, but he'd certainly be on the bench, for if not starting, for any other Six Nations team, wouldn't he?
Absolutely. What a game. More on this to come. Tomorrow, we're going to be joined by Gregor Townsend, the Scotland boss, Andy Farrell, the Ireland head coach, Steve Borthwick, the England head coach, and Michele Lamoureux, the only captain still standing from this time last year. I cannot believe that. That has never happened before. Five new captains, or six if you include Russell and Darj. That can't have happened before. All those new captains that we'll hear from Michele Lamoureux tomorrow, along with Townsend, Farrell and Borthwick. The dailies are going to keep coming every single morning. You will not miss a thing with us, and we'll see you then.
On the Football Daily Podcast,
the Women's Football Weekly,
with me, Ellen White.
Ellen White coming forward for England, there is the second.
And Lee Ben Haynes, with some of the biggest names in the WSL, joining us every week to discuss everything that's happening in the women's game.
Right after the World Cup, got told we're going to America. I thought, amazing. 10 days in training, did my meniscus, and the next day they flew to America.
Blocked header 6 yards out, Ellen White!
The Women's Football Weekly Podcast.
New episodes every Wednesday.
Subscribe to the Football Daily on BBC Sounds.